What's up, Atlanta sports fans? I'm Graham Waldrop, and alongside me, as always, is Adam Kalal, and we're Atlanta's Own. Two Atlanta natives recap the week that was in Atlanta professional sports, wacky ass hijinks, and analysis. Adam, how's it going, sir?
Graham, good evening to you, as always, sir. It's, you know, I'm glad, I enjoyed the format of our last show, but it feels nice to be back to the regular format and have some actual news to discuss.
Yeah, I like the hockey retrospective. We promised Olympics, and 96 Olympics would be our next quarantine retrospective. Didn't really get around to doing that. And then luckily for us, we were bailed out by the NFL draft happening last week through the weekend.
Yeah, what it came down to for me was just constant procrastination on how to start researching even which route to go with the Olympics. It's just a huge subject, so laziness came into play. But like you said, the draft bailed us out, and this evening, while I was waiting for you, what'd you guys have, like a three-hour dinner over there tonight or something?
It was like an hour.
That's a long dinner.
Oh, yeah.
On a casual Tuesday?
We were watching Dan Ozarks, too, so.
Anyways, I didn't know what time we were starting, so I sat down and started watching the 95 Olympics. I mean, not the 95 Olympics, the World Series.
Ah, makes more sense.
Have you seen that going on Fox Sports Net?
Yeah, I heard they're replaying it.
Dude, I would highly recommend it. Like, they're doing a game every night, but I went and watched the replay of game one, and I got into it. Like, the first inning, Kenny Lofton swiped third. Peter O'Brien had a perfect throw and like right on the bag, but Chipper's tag was just a little late on the chest, and the umpire like just made an emphatic safe call, and he was 100% correct, but it was still like exciting and also made me realize how much better the game was without instant replay, because it was the right call. But in today's day and age, it absolutely would have been looked at, and then there'd be like a 4-minute delay and just a bunch of bullshit. But I'm looking forward to watching this whole thing, because I didn't get to fully, like I said, I was 5 or 6. I know that you remember like every single moment since you came out of the womb. So it's a little different for you. But yeah, I definitely don't remember watching this at all. My only memory of the 95 World Series is watching the 1995 Atlanta Braves World Series VHS cassette in my basement on car rides. Probably at least 25 to 30 times in my life. So that's my memory. So I'm looking forward to seeing the whole games, and it's, you know, it feels like baseball on TV. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. That was a really fun series for sure. And the majority of my memories come from that 95 VHS tape as well. I really didn't start to develop that, photographic memory until I was 6 years old. So it was about 1 year beforehand.
Okay, so you don't remember watching that either.
I remember watching it, but it's vague. It's like I don't have like really carved out memories of watching it. I remember watching it. I just don't really like. I couldn't say yes from my memory of watching it. I remember this, but I remembered it. I remember watching it. Just nothing specific.
Veronica was watching it in the background with me, and she was like, "So you remember watching this, right?" I was like, "No, I was like 5 or 6, I don't remember." She's like, "Wait, so you don't really have any memories of the Braves winning the one championship that they have won?" I was like, "No, that's why this is all so tragic for us. And that's the only one that Atlanta has. It's very unfair."
Couldn't have said it
better. That's why we do this podcast.
Yeah, you know, if we had won like the 95 World Series, 96 World Series, you know, maybe like one more, and the Falcons have won at least one Super Bowl, you know, you probably wouldn't be as inclined to do this as we are, as we are today. So we need an outlet for our suffering. You know, when you win all the time, or you've won multiple championships in recent memory, you don't need an outlet. You're fine. You're happy all the time. You have a good life.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm sure like everyone in all those cities that have won, their life is fantastic. They got no issues going on at all. They're just loving it.
Yeah. You have nothing to bitch about.
Yeah. I believe that.
Yeah. No epidemics, no money trouble. Nothing can supersede your joy of winning a sports championship as a fan.
We don't want to hear it here at Atlanta's Own.
Let's dive into the NFL draft, Adam. It happened last Thursday through Saturday or Sunday, who knows. It was
a little more current.
Yeah, it was interesting for me watching it. I haven't been that excited to watch the draft in a while. Even watched part of the second round, which I hardly ever do. Did not watch third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round. But got about 1.5 rounds out of me.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was... I mean, obviously, most of that, I assume, was due to coronavirus and not having anything live to watch in forever. But I thought it was... NFL did a great job with it. I remember when they first announced that they were going on with the draft, there was some people were complaining about it, saying, oh, come on, NFL, put others' lives over the draft. But you don't have to be there in person for the draft. So it was perfect. I think I saw something like 55 million viewers or something crazy like that. So, yeah, a lot of people were watching, and it worked out great. There weren't any technical glitches. I mean, they did the little thing with the fans in the background on TV, which was, you know, kind of get the feeling that fans are there. So I thought it was really cool. We did a little Zoom chat with some of our friends to watch it together. Yeah, it was a good night.
Yeah, for sure. And I agree. I thought they did a really nice job with it. And it was the first time I've ever worn my jersey while watching the NFL draft. I was like, who knows if I'll ever be able to wear this thing again.
Right. Well, I sure as hell hope you can, Graham, because that would be very sad.
That would be. That'd be a tragedy.
But yeah, there's going into the draft, there's so much speculation about the Falcons. And I think there were rumors that had them trading as far up as to number 2 to get Chase Young, which would have... You know, I was kind of pushing forward in the moment, but in hindsight, we just needed more depth. And I think that's what this draft brought.
Yeah, there were specific holes that were glaring, particularly at cornerback, the defensive line. And it seems like whenever we've had those issues in the past, Thomas reaches for somebody that isn't within the position of need. And I know there's the whole debate between need and best player available, but it's like, you know, when we drafted Calvin Ridley. Even though I love Calvin, I was like, this doesn't seem like the right thing for us to do because we had so many other glaring holes. This time, though, it was like every pick that happened was a result of having to fill in holes in the roster with hopefully good players. But, you know, each pick, you know, when I don't know that much about the players coming out, at least initially, particularly, you know, Matt Hennessy from Temple, who drafted in the third round offensive lineman, I was like, oh, cornerback makes sense. Defensive tackle, defensive end hybrid with Marlon Davidson makes sense. I mean, every pick, I was like, you know, even Michael Walker from Fresno State, the linebacker, fourth round, makes sense. The punter in the seventh round, makes sense. There was never a pick where I was like, even when I don't know the intangibles about a guy, I was like, oh, why the fuck are we drafting that position? It's the first time I could say that in a Thomas Dimitroff draft. Maybe going back to 2008.
Which was really refreshing because, you know, these guys are kind of drafting for their lives still at this point. Dan Quinn and Dimitroff. And a lot of these picks are not necessarily picks for this year. So that's why trading up to 2 I thought was a possibility because they're willing to mortgage the future because they're just trying to win this year. But by them not doing that and drafting, I mean – what, third round Matt Hennessy, he's a potential, I mean, he's going to take over for Alex Mack, possibly next year. The safety we drafted, Jalen Hawkins in the fourth round. Next year we have no safety signed, so that's another pick for next year probably. So at all, I mean, I'm very happy with the fact that they, yeah, we improved Davidson, Terrell, probably Michael Walker. They're all going to help us this year. But a couple of these other guys, that's all about next year. Depth pieces and next year. So it's good on those two for keeping the organization's future outlook over their own personal needs.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even if you had traded up to the second pick and taken Young, right, you know, if that had worked out, it was like, okay, you've probably lost the majority of your picks this year, some next year, hell, maybe even some a year later, you know, 2 years down the road. So it's like, yeah, you could have done that, but the roster already has a lot of glaring holes, particularly in the secondary, would be even worse off I think, even if you had drafted Young, even though he would help across the board, seemingly, that's too much to give up when you have as many holes as the Falcons do. And even though we are at least lauding this draft on paper in the sense of filling holes that were needed, you also have to look back to how these holes were created with Dimitroff and Quinn. So it's like they're cleaning up their own mistakes. They were, you know, on paper, seemingly it's a decent draft. But we have to remember that it was in response to mistakes they've made in the past. Like, you know, not being able to draft a defensive end worth shit for ever. You know, having Robert Alford and Desmond Trufant no longer on the team because they didn't work out Jalen Collins. You know, those are high draft picks. So, you know, there's a reason why we're here.
Trufant was a money thing. Jalen Collins was a drug thing. That's the one area I don't think you can fault them too much, is they've done well drafting in the secondary, from Keanu Neal to Ricardo Allen to Monte KZ.
Alford was bad, though.
Yeah, but overall, they've done pretty damn well out there.
It's okay. I wouldn't say it's anything outstanding.
But you can't blame Trufant, you know, leaving because they couldn't afford him anymore on them.
Well, yeah, but he was never the cornerback we really needed, I felt like. I feel like he had maybe one or two years of being a top-tier corner, but other than that, for how high you selected him, it was a disappointment, I think, at the end of the day, and just the lack of interceptions. And it's one of those things that, you know, I think we can segue into A.J. Terrell here. It's also a guy that didn't really get a lot of interceptions at Clemson. Before we jump into Terrell's stats and whatnot, I thought it was really funny that we were watching the draft on Zoom, as Ed had mentioned, and we get to the point where, you know, Falcons drafting, and it's like, A.J. Terrell, cornerback out of Clemson. And I was like, you know, so we watched, them talk about it, and then I was like, so Adam, what do you think of this guy? And he's like, I have no idea who he is, which was hilarious, considering Adam's went to Clemson, pretty big Clemson fan. Funny moment.
I had a feeling you were going to throw me under the bus for that moment, so I'll take this time to also throw you under the bus, where after this pick, Graham is bitching about our defensive line and how it's just such a tragedy that we didn't pick anyone on our defensive line. And I was like, you know, we really didn't need to go first round with them. If you think we're going to the season with who we have, I don't know, you called me a dumbass or something that crossed the line. And it occurred to me that Graham, this co-host of Atlanta Zone and Atlanta Sports Podcast, had completely forgotten the fact that we drafted Dante Fowler Jr. I mean, that we signed Dante Fowler Jr. a couple months ago.
Hey, man, it's been a weird time. My brain's not been in sports mode for a couple of months, so I was shaking off the cobwebs there, and I apologize for my outrageous outburst in the moment of passion.
Well, anyways, yes, I admit us drafting Terrell was not on my radar at all. I don't think it was on anyone's radar, really. I mean, you look at all the mock drafts, and that's not a name I saw pop up once. But in hindsight, after digging into the guy a little more, I feel pretty good about it overall.
Yeah, he's got good size, 6'1", 190, which is great for a corner. You know, you see a lot of corners these days being under 6 feet, well below 200 pounds, in the 180 range, 185 range. So it's nice to see he's got, you know, good athleticism. And it seems like he's a very physical corner, which is interesting. And he doesn't seem like he totally fits into the scheme the Falcons run. We run a lot of zone defense. And he was more of a man-to-man cover corner and didn't really do a lot of zone coverage at Clemson. So I'm really interested to watch him see how he gels with the Falcons secondary, particularly when everyone on the cornerback position is so young. You know, Isaiah Oliver, Kendall Sheffield, and now him. I mean, these guys have a combined, 2 years of experience between them in the NFL? Something like that? 2-3 years?
Yeah, he's an experienced player, though, playing 3 years at Clemson. Dabo just raved about him. I don't know if you saw this quote. Dabo compared him to Deshaun Watson at his position, and just in terms of his consistency, showed up as a freshman, ready to go. He's played in two national championships now. Just loves his character. And he's got a lot of confidence, which I think we just need, like, him and our second-round pick, Marlon Davidson, neither of them are lacking in confidence at all. And that's what this football team needs. Like, we're coming from, you know, the Vic Beasleys, Trufant. You don't hear from those guys much at all. It seemed like they were kind of just there. So I think it's a good thing that we're getting a couple guys that, you know they're great. They want to be great. They think they're destined to be great. And I think that this football team needs that push from people like that.
Yeah, and I would agree, particularly on Davidson. We'll get to his quote a little later. That was pretty funny from the combine. But another thing that people were kind of upset about was, you know, everyone thought this was a reach pick. You know, there was rumor that we'd move up to get C.J. Henderson, the Florida cornerback, but that didn't happen. And so then once we drafted Terrell, people were complaining it was a reach. And these people that are complaining it was a reach are, you know, not in the NFL. I mean, there are multiple reports that the Raiders were planning to draft him at 19 and that the Saints wanted to trade up in front of the L.A. Rams in order to draft him. So there are plenty of teams that are vying for his services. So, I mean, yeah, you can say it's every right. Anyone has every right to say it's a reach. But to have multiple NFL teams wanting to draft him around this position, you know, says a little something about him, I think, in terms of his value. And I also liked when I was watching some film on him, like I mentioned, the physicality at the line of scrimmage. And he also knows how to look for the ball, as opposed to, you know, guys like Robert Alford and other cornerbacks in the past that just, like, run blindly with the receiver and never look for the ball. So that was nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, he had the pick six in the national championship game against Alabama a couple years ago. So, I mean, a lot of people knocked him on his game against LSU, and I think my initial reaction was just basing it off that one game where he just got torched a couple times. But LSU was just a different animal as well. That's one of the best offenses of all time. So you got to look at his entire body, and he had a stellar college career. He's one of those guys, like, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I watch every single Clemson game all the way through. That's just not true at all. But I feel like it's a good thing that he wasn't, like, number one on the top of my head for players, because people didn't throw to him. I think he was, like, the I don't remember the stat, but I saw the stat where he was targeted very little, which is what you want out of a shutdown corner. So you don't necessarily get all the chances for interceptions because they're not throwing your way. They're picking somewhere else.
Right, I noticed that. He only had 6 picks in 3 seasons and 13 total passes defended. So that said, and he played pretty much every damn game. I don't think he may have missed a couple, but, you know, it's 14 games, 15 games, seemingly every season from what I saw. So, and yeah, that either and he had a number of tackles. So that says to me that, you know, he's not being picked on that often. If that's especially if he only has 13 passes defended. So
yeah, we know Robert Alford's name so damn well because they were thrown to his side of the field any chance they could get.
Right, and I think it would be really nice if this could sort of start a trend of drafting more physical corners, less finesse corners that are just trying to keep guys in front of them, where we can actually, you know, one thing that drives me nuts in the Dan Quinn defense, ever since he's been here, regardless of who the coordinator is, it's just the amount of space we give receivers is just mind-boggling. No one challenges at the line of scrimmage ever. So maybe, I mean, I'm reaching here. This is a reach, a personal reach. But drafting a physical corner like this says to me, hopefully, that they're trying to change the philosophy of the defense a little bit and get a little more aggressive, do a little more man-on-man coverage, and stop, you know, totally relying on this cover three soft zone bullshit, play off 10, 15 yards off the receiver that we see week in, week out. I just can't stand it anymore.
Yeah, I hear you there for sure. And what you're saying about us being so young, I agree with that. But, I mean, I like some of these guys. I mean, Kendall Sheffield, he was showing out at the end of the year. My boy Bleedy Ray Wilson is always there. Isaiah Oliver, like, there's some potential. And then of course, if Keanu Neal can stay healthy, along with Big Balls, we got something, Graham.
Yeah, and I think having Ricardo Allen hopefully healthy to guide the way as a defensive captain will help these guys for sure. And the good news about, you know, Raheem Morris, Jeff Ulbrich are still there. You know, that unit really turned around the second half of the year in the secondary. Did a good job considering they were without Trufant and were sort of just thrown into the deep end. So, you know, hopefully we see progression from the players that return. We see some more physicality with the addition of A.J. Terrell that can hopefully infect the rest of the secondary and the scheming and things like that. And that would be really, really awesome. So we shall see how that progresses. But, I mean, I think considering what we needed, this pick makes sense, like I said.
Yeah, you can't – I don't understand how you could be upset at it. Like, there was the other – the Espinoza, was he the D end out of Iowa that I think a lot of people had us taken? And, like, he produced – all 3 years at Iowa, but he's also just got Vic Beasley written all over him, like undersized DN, one move. It's like, I don't want to take, and they were already saying he's a project, whereas Terrell, he can come in and be our number one corner right now. So I'm happy they went that route versus a guy who could be good, but not great. Whereas Terrell, he could be a shutdown corner. I hear like his floor is Trufant. That's just floor, basically. So you're getting an above average corner from the get-go, potential to, for a very high ceiling. So I like it.
Good stuff. And yeah, and I think that's a recurring theme with this draft class is experience. We're not drafting people that, you know, haven't played a lot. You know, the next guy, Marlon Davidson, played all 4 years at Auburn. He's drafted the 47th pick in the second round. He's a defensive tackle, defensive end hybrid. And primarily played defensive end at Auburn. But he had a hell of a season last year. 12.5 tackles for loss, 7.5 sacks. All-SEC first-team player. And the big news about this guy, Adam, unlike our other defensive ends of the past, is that he has a spin move, which is really, really big for us.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see, because I think they want him as a D tackle. Like, I mean, I guess you could go either route with it. I've heard D end on, he could play D end on running plays and D tackle on passing plays, but I don't know, man. I just want him in the middle there with Grady.
Well, what about your boy Tyler Davidson? We just re-signed.
Well, he's the run stopper.
So you put him in a defensive tackle, put in Davidson defensive tackle for passing scenarios.
Yeah. But I mean, if they like him at D end, I love it. But I want him. I don't want him like, because I think he played mostly D tackle, but learned D end. So I don't want him learning a new position.
He was primarily defensive end last year, so he did his damage on the edge for the most part last season. He's played both though, so it's not like it's a foreign concept to him. And another good thing is that I'm sure he'll get some time on special teams, and he had 3 blocked kicks in 2018, so he knows what he's doing there, which is insane to have that many blocked kicks in a single season. And as Adam mentioned, one of the is the attitude, right? I'm paraphrasing here, but he sounds like an angry son of a bitch, which I really like because, you know, Falcons, everybody's such a nice guy. I'm not saying he's not a nice guy, but he's got an edge to him. He said the thing he loves most about football is you can hit the hell out of people. You don't have to worry about the police coming after you. You can just pulverize the hell out of somebody. That's the thing he loves most about football. So I think that's great. We need, like you were saying, we need someone with a little grit and edge to them that just wants to knock the shit out of somebody.
Yeah, and I've got a direct quote from him along the same grounds, just with his confidence. He said, "When they pulled me from the womb, I was the best. I had the best written across my forehead. That's not being cocky. That's just 100% honest." That's what I'm talking about. And I just love this pick because he's going to make everyone on that line better too. Grady's not going to be double teamed every play. Dante Fowler's going to have a little more time. Tack, the guy who we know can get to the quarterback, but sometimes just need half a second more. He's always seemed to be a half a second behind. The combination of Terrell and Marlon Davidson, that could be that half a second. So we could see a good year from Tack. with these improvements.
Yeah, I think this really lengthens the defensive line and really diversifies how you can use players in certain personnel. You know, we saw Tack plenty of times last year line up in the tackle position. So, you know, it can be interesting to really see what kind of combinations work well against specific teams, picking on the weaknesses of various offensive lines and really seeing, you know Gray's a fixture on the interior, and you know Fowler's going to be on the outside, but how they use Davidson, how they use Tack is going to be really fascinating to watch in terms of, you know, are they going to line up together? Who's going to be defensive tackle? Who's going to be the DE? You know, you can really mix it up. You can do whatever you want on any play, which is really cool.
Yeah, it is. I don't love our depth there still, obviously. Besides those players you mentioned, we've got like Sanat, a D tackle, your boy Steven Means. I think he's one of the top backups right now. It kind of hurts losing what's his face? Claiborne. Yeah. Like I'd like a veteran depth addition at some point here. On June 1st, we free up $10 million from Trufant's contract. So I think there's still more moves to be made, but you know, just the potential that starting four with Davidson in the mix there, it's pretty awesome.
Definitely. And I think you're exactly right. I think the defensive line is not a finished product. You also have to keep in mind the Falcons signed 20 undrafted free agents after the draft. So one of those guys could come in and help. You also might be able to pick up someone else when all these cuts happen in June, who could be a viable piece to optimize the defensive line. So yeah, there's a lot of room there. And yeah, I like this pick. And I think we can just move along to Matt Hennessy, the center guard hybrid out of Temple, primarily played center. And as Adam mentioned, he's the heir apparent to Alex Mack. Very durable offensive lineman, only missed four games over three seasons. The one issue a lot of people are having with him is that he's only 308 pounds. So he's going to need to put on a little bit of weight, I think, to really make a huge impact in the NFL, but that's not something that seems out of the ordinary to do. I would also say if he is going to challenge for a starting guard position this season, he is going to need to pack on some weight, for sure. Although our guys who started at guard last year weighed, you know, 20, 30 pounds more than him and Brown and Carpenter, and they both sucked, so what do I know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, he is a center, and Alex Mack weighs 311. He weighs 307, so that's not a concern. But, yeah, if he's going to try to play guard, and I think the playing guard thing, that's not what he's brought in here for. It might just be a ploy to get one of those Jamon Brown or Carpenter to, like, play up with the competition. Maybe it's just that much better and can win it. But, you know, he's good size for a center, and that's what we're really bringing him in for. So if Alex Mack goes down, which, you know, he's 34 now, we've seen him get hurt a couple times over the past couple years, we got Hennessy to back him up instead of Sean Harlow, John Wetzel, someone like that.
Yeah, and a lot of people have really praised his athleticism. Seems to be like above average athleticism for an alignment, which is good with this zone blocking scheme. And to be learning from one of the best centers in football over the last, you know, 8-9 years, and Alex Mack is also really big for him. So hopefully he can come in here and really help us out, either in depth position or, you know, if he can challenge for that guard spot. I mean, I'd say he should get every opportunity to compete for that, because I think that's still a hole.
Yeah, the more experience he can get this year, the better for next year when he does take over for Mack, for sure. But yeah, I like the pick. A lot of people had him rated as the top center in the draft, could have gone in the second round. So once again, I think TD and Dan Quinn have done pretty well here.
We have Michael Walker, Fresno State, who's drafted in the fourth round, who also adds some depth to the defensive line because he played defensive end primarily in 2018, but also played linebacker in 2019. But he rushed the passer as a linebacker last year too. So had, you know, a pretty decent run at Fresno State. Started at Arizona State, transferred to Fresno State. As a defensive end, he had 13.5 tackles for loss and 4 sacks. And as a linebacker, he had 9 tackles for loss and 2.5 sacks, and racked up a ton of tackles just individually up the field. But the one thing I really liked, at least looking at the statistics, was 10 total passes defended, with 6 of them coming when he's playing to the defensive end, which shows that he knows, you know, his way around the ball at the line of scrimmage, which is great. So, I mean, who's to say that he could have come in and get some snaps at defensive end this year?
Well, I think our depth at linebacker is just atrocious. So I think it's kind of expected that he's going to step in and take one of those, the starting role that we're looking to fill this year. Like, I mean, have you looked at our linebackers?
Which is one of the reasons why I wish we could have, you know, not won as many games last year, so we could have been in a position to draft. Who was the guy, Adam, from Clemson, who everybody loved, who played all over the field?
Oh, Isaiah Simmons.
Yeah, who played just tons of, yeah, everywhere on the field. You know, that was the kind of guy I really wish we could have gotten. Unfortunately, it just wasn't in the cards. And not to say Walker will live up to that, but, I mean, his physicality and the way he plays, he seems like you know, the next sort of iteration of Devondre Campbell. So I don't know how, you know, if he's going to be, you know, handed the starter's job or anything like that, but I think we'll see him on the field a good amount this year.
Yeah, and this, I mean, hopefully we pick up another veteran to fill in some of this depth, because our other options there is like Leroy Reynolds, I suppose. But, yeah, well, everything I've read about Walker seems like he has great awareness on the field. He's a solid tackler. He's not a big Keanu Neal whopper, but he's going to make the tackles, which is, you know, I think we've seen enough linebackers just making these bullshit arm tackles on the Falcons to, I just want someone that's going to bring them down. I don't care how they do it.
Right. And that was the thing a lot of people said, is like, he's not flashy, but he makes the play, kind of thing. So
some speed concerns with him, I believe.
Yeah. But he's not, but you know what? Duke Riley was the fastest linebacker or whatever in the universe, and he's you know, we know his story and how bad he's been.
He was hot trash.
Like, all of these guys seem a little different than what TD normally drafts, which, you know, leads me to believe that maybe hopefully it'll be a better outcome for a lot of these guys than some of our picks in the past that just haven't been up to snuff.
You think Rich McKay had anything to do with this sensible draft?
It could have been.
Because remember, he took on that role where he's back in football ops again. And, I mean, I've heard that just everywhere, how this just isn't a typical TD and Dan Quinn draft.
Yeah, the only guy that really seemed like a typical TD DQ pick was Jalen Hawkins, who we drafted also in the 4th round. You know, seemed kind of like a Keanu Neal-style guy, big header, can get in the box, play physical for a safety. So that was really the only guy that I was just really like, okay, this feels like a typical Dimitroff, Dan Quinn pick. But yeah, you're right. Everyone else doesn't really fit the mold, which I like. It makes me more confident in their abilities, because God knows how many people they've whiffed on over the years.
And once again, I mean, even with that Jalen Hawkins pick, like, none of our current safeties are under contract for next year. So it is a future looking pick. And Keanu Neal hasn't been healthy the last 2 years, so we might need that depth at safety.
And Ricardo Allen's getting older. And, you know, we know what KZ can do when he plays safety. But I agree with you. I mean, it's a, when you think about it, especially down the line, it's a thin position. Do you have anything else on Hawkins you want to touch on?
Yeah, nothing. I mean, there is a lot of talk about him being a reach in the 4th round, but also we didn't have a 5th or 6th round pick. So it might be one of those things where, you know, maybe that was just their guy. They could have taken him in the 6th round, but that wasn't an option for them. So, yeah, it's the one that I don't expect him to be starting this year. Well, Hennessy either, but Hennessy has a chance. But, you know, he's all right. Experienced player. We'll see. Hopefully he develops, contributes on special teams.
And the last guy we got is round 7, pick number 228, Sterling Hoffrichter from Syracuse, who I know that got Adam pretty riled up, given your affinity for a quality punt. Like, in the AFC, what was it, AFC divisional game, you were just obsessed with that Tennessee punter. You're just like, oh, this guy is just the best damn punter you've ever seen. I mean, look at the hang time on that, the position of the ball.
He was a game changer.
Oh, I agree. I'm just saying, I just knew that would make you excited, because you have a very, you know, deep appreciation for punters.
Yeah, I mean, the strange thing is I'm sure we could have gotten this fellow. I wrote down on my little note sheet here, I wrote down everyone's name except his. I just wrote down punter. Because it's like, he's a punter. We could have gotten him as an undrafted free agent. Unless they just really love the guy. I thought Alan Bailey did a fine enough job at the end of the year. So, I mean, I guess they wanted to bring in competition. It's a little strange, but, you know, we got Matt Bosher in the seventh round. That one worked out for a while. Apparently this kid likes to hit like Matt Bosher does. So, and he can kick long field goals. I think that was probably the biggest kicker, because they don't, well, yeah, pun intended. They don't fully trust my boy Young Wei with kicks over 50 yards. I think this guy was like 3 for 4 in his college career on kicks over 50 yards. So that's something to look at.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm okay with getting a punter at this point too, because I feel like that's just something we need. You know, Bosher's time is clearly done. I can't remember who our punter was. I know you said his name. Kyle Allen or Alan Bailey or whatever.
Alan Bailey, Bailey Allen, something like that.
Who knows? But I mean,
say this much. This guy.
Oh, Alan Bailey's on the defensive line. I think Kyle Allen is. I don't freaking know. He's a white. I know it's not Alan Bailey because that's a guy on our defensive line. Stephen Means type. But
it's Ryan Allen.
Ryan Allen. Kyle Allen's the Panthers quarterback. Ryan Allen. But yeah, I think it's totally fine to have some competition up Hunter. I mean, how many times have we gotten upset, especially at Bosch over the last few years, where it's just like, good guy, that was an awful punt. You know, positioning, punting is just so important. And you obviously don't want to punt, but when you have to, you want someone back there who can do it really damn well. And hopefully this kid can come in here and do the job. And I think you're exactly right. Being able to kick long field goals when you've got a kicker who you're not really that familiar with that you can hopefully rely on in a pinch if you need him is a good thing. So I have really nothing negative to say about this pick. And it seems like, you know, once again, another position that we need to improve on. So screw it.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's a seventh round pick. I feel like Mr. Hoffreichter has a lot better chance of making the team than any other seventh round pick would.
But you're right. If it doesn't work out, it's not like you can't find another punter somewhere else. So it's not the end of the world. You know, a lot of times you get a seventh round pick and you pick some defensive end or linebacker. Remember that guy, Tyler Starr, who we drafted, I think, the year we were on Hard Knocks?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the long blonde hair. He was like the seventh round pick. And it's like he was a seventh round pick. How many seventh round picks do absolutely zilch, you know, in their careers? And so it's like, it's nice to actually say, oh, it's a seventh round pick that actually might have a chance. Not to say that other seventh round picks don't, and there have been successful ones, but, you know, it's not like they're a dime a dozen. This guy feels like maybe he has a tangible chance given his collegiate career and the position that the Falcons are in when it comes to special teams with the kicker position. So,
man, you're really passionate about this guy.
Yeah, your passion inspired me.
I feel like you've taken on a lot more passion than me about this guy. Proud of you, Graham. Gotta love punters.
That's my boy, Hoffreichter. I might get a damn jersey. One of those ugly-ass black-red fades.
Hell yeah.
Hoffreichter, number 94.
Maybe wait till he makes the team.
Yeah, it's going to do. I probably have to get a custom-made jersey and then have that ordered.
Could be worth it.
Last thing on Stephen Hoffreichter is that, according to the Syracuse official site, per the Falcoholic, which I'm reading about him now, is saying that when he ends a kick, he does the Star Trek Vulcan salute, you know, the thing where you spread your fingers out, the thing Leonard Nimoy did.
So he's a Dragon Con guy.
He's a Dragon Con guy. Well, he says it's reflexive. It's not something he does consciously. But it is hilarious that that's what he does. I don't know how you can do that reflexively. I have a hard time keeping my ring finger and my pinky together when I'm trying to do the Vulcan salute. Not that I do that very often because I don't really give a shit about Star Trek, but, you know, I'm struggling with it right now. If you could see me.
I do. You look like an idiot. I would hope that a punter has a, I would hope that a punter has a lot stronger hands than you do, Graham, and is capable of manipulating his fingers.
I actually do it better with my right hand than I can with my left. That's interesting. Whatever. So that is the Falcons draft class.
One undrafted free agent I want to mention. Jared Pinkney, tight end out of Vanderbilt. Dude, 6'4", 257 pounds. 2 years ago, he was ranked as one of the top five tight ends in the nation. He had 7 touchdowns 2 years ago with Vanderbilt. And then this year, just completely fell off the map. And that was due to, one, an ankle injury, and two, just god-awful quarterback play. So his quarterback from 2 years ago is now a backup somewhere in the NFL, and he's just got some hot piece of trash as his quarterback, and he only had like 250 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns last year. So he, a guy who he probably would have been, if he had come out the previous year, drafted in maybe 3rd round, something like that. So certainly a guy to take a flyer on, and one I look forward to seeing how he does to maybe be the 3rd string behind my other boy, Jaden Graham.
I mean, tight end could be maybe not a wide-open competition, but it wouldn't surprise me if that, based off those peripherals that you just gave me, if, you know, we know how much Matt Ryan loves his tight ends. So, I mean, he made Austin Hooper into the highest-paid tight end in NFL history. I mean, who was Austin Hooper before he got here? So, you know, go figure.
Yeah.
Definitely something to keep your eye on.
Yeah, a guy just needs a chance. Let's see what he's got.
Well, that's your Falcons draft report. Good stuff. I guess the most research we've ever done on a Falcons draft. We're usually just like, we don't know anything about this guy. He's just a guy, you know. At least with the first 3 picks. Maybe the latter ones, we didn't really know what the hell we're talking about. But the first 3, I thought, especially first 2, we did a good job.
Yeah, I mean, I even got stuff I didn't touch on with Marlon Davidson. I wanted to mention his favorite play in his college career was, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, chasing down Russell Gage, current number 3 wide receiver for the Falcons, chasing him down the field for 67 yards and make the tackle before the goal line.
Son of a bitch. And let's keep in mind, too, you know, Davidson's over 300 pounds. You know, it's not like he's a Vic Beasley type that has some speed that's, you know, 250, to whatever Vic was. You know, this guy's a little north of 300 pounds, and he's got great athleticism for his size.
But that isn't just a sign of his speed, too. It's also a sign of he's got a motor. Have you ever seen Vic Beasley run 67 yards down the field to make a tackle?
I saw him return a fumble for a touchdown.
Yeah, that's a different situation.
Going about like 80. Yeah, exactly. No, I haven't seen him do that, even in pass coverage.
I feel like Vic thought he was like playing like Foursquare or something, and he had to stay in his square. So if he wasn't immediately involved in the play, you could find him in his square.
Right, just sitting there.
So I look forward to, I'm really excited about that kid.
Yeah, I think he's definitely the, at least on paper, seems to like be the jewel of the class. You know, we'll see how training camp shakes out and things like that. But he's the guy that I'm definitely most excited about for sure. Let's talk about baseball, Adam. When was the last time we did that? February? Bob Nightingale of USA Today, per Adam Kalal of Atlanta Zone, has reported that Nightingale writes that there's a plan going around where MLB would be reorganized into, what is it? Three divisions that are interleague, 10 teams each division, and that we could get baseball by late June. And that the Braves would, for some reason, be in the Central Division. It's just weird that every other team that's on the Eastern Seaboard is in the East, and then we're with, like, the Cubs and the Brewers and the Royals. Although, you know what, I'm not complaining, because on paper we have the best team in this division. So that could definitely work out for us. But I think what's interesting about this is that it seems like teams would actually play at their home stadiums. So they would drop this idea that was also proposed where, you know, people would be in Arizona only, or, you know, the Western teams would be in Arizona and the other teams that are located on the other side of the country would just play all season in Florida. This seems to be, you know, you wouldn't have fans yet, but you would have a scenario where there would be baseball, and it'd be kind of weird, but teams would actually be traveling around and playing in their home stadiums. And, you know, this article mentions that, you know, high profile guys like Mike Trout and Clayton Kershaw did not want to spend, you know, months and months and months away from their families. So I'm sure the Players Union had a lot of grievances around being stuck in Florida and Arizona for a whole year. But this is interesting. I mean, at this point they could say everybody's going to play and I don't know, Freddie Freeman's backyard, and Charlie Freeman's going to be, you know, the little 3-year-old son is going to be pitching to everybody and be like, all right, let's fucking do it. Let's put some baseball. But what do you think about this idea, seriously?
I'm starting to get excited about it because before this article came out today, like yesterday, I read about how all the executives feel confident that we're going to play baseball of some sort today. And like the worst case scenario, which I think would be badass, is I've seen the, I mean, they're still just throwing out proposals. So this isn't settled on yet. This is just the latest. But another thing I saw was a 60-day tournament.
Jesus.
Round robin. So like it would start with, I think each team would be guaranteed like 30 games or something like that. So it's not like you can just lose a 7-game series and that's it. But it would, you would slowly work down. And then once you get to like the league championship series, then it would just be a regular straight ALCS, NLCS lead into the World Series. 60 days, you're done at Thanksgiving. So that's the worst case scenario, which I think would be sick.
Like, it feels like with the condensed time frame, I don't know, there'd just be more urgency early on in the season.
Oh, yeah. No, it'd be unbelievable. But I like this plan. This plan, the new one that you just mentioned, that's, we're talking about like 100 games or so. They'd be reporting to spring training again in the next couple weeks. And it's all contingent on, you know, because we've got some states opening up, some states not. Depends on what the CDC says and all this stuff. But I think some, I think we're going to hear something in the next couple of weeks about this. But yeah, I mean, I just, it's for everyone's advantage. The baseball gets played, the fans, the players, the owners. They even talked in this article about like maybe by the end of the year, you can have like a couple thousand people in the stadium, or by the playoffs, which it's all going to be surreal. But they're already playing in, they're playing in Japan, they're playing in Korea. And we're like a couple months behind them in all of this. So just the fact that they're playing, and you got like the Premier League set to start up again in like June. Sports are coming back this year. So I feel pretty good about this happening.
Yeah, and the other thing that this article calls out, which I thought was interesting, is that Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, and Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who I'd never heard of, were saying that teams can play in their own ballparks this summer in Chicago and New York. New York in particular, as we all know, has been just decimated by the damn coronavirus. So for them to be saying that, it's hopefully a good sign. We'll see how it all shakes out. As Adam mentioned, there's a lot of hoops to jump through and you know, things that have to kind of play out, but we'll see how it transpires, and hope to God we can get some damn baseball this year.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, watch this 95 World Series. You're going to be jonesing. I just imagine Ronald Acuna playing against David Justice and all this shit. It's a weird morphed reality I got going on right now.
You say you watched game one, right?
Oh, I'm in the third inning. That's the rest of my evening.
Has the Fred McGriff home run happened?
Fred McGriff home run happened. Maddox is cruising. And someone, because they had watched this last night, most of the Braves Twitter world, and just compared watching Greg Maddux again to Mike Soroka, and just like really what a fucking masterpiece Soroka's game three against the Cardinals was. That's kind of just got overshadowed because of all the bullshit that happened after that. But yeah, but like I could see it, man. Just how, I mean, watching Maddux pitch in this game tonight, like it's just like so easy, just like shattered bats and just cruising along. Like it never seems like spectacular, like in the fact of, it's not like he's striking everyone out, but it's just like such easy, cool, calm, collected pitching, and I love it.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing with Maddox, was, you know, he doesn't have the Soroka fastball either. What he was able to do is just insane with how he could manipulate his pitches, especially on the outside corner of the plate. I mean, it's like how you know, it's incredible that guy did what he did. You know, he just looks like the most average person in the world. He's one of the all-time great pitchers ever, with stuff that never touched 90 miles an hour, you know? It's like everything's yeah. 88, 85, 74. You know, it's just got just the filthiest movement in the damn world. And it's particularly at that point, I mean, he was at the peak of his powers, for sure.
Yeah, I thought it was nuts. I mean, at the beginning of the broadcast, they were saying how They're like, well, it's all but official that Maddux will be the Cy Young winner this year for 4 years in a row. That's just 91 through 95. Yep.
Yeah. Who does that anymore? You know, it's interesting. I was, we might not have gotten Greg Maddux had we gotten Barry Bonds. And, whenever we did sign Maddux, which I think was 93, or 94, I can't remember. But there was a deal on the table for Barry Bonds that we were going to get him. But if we had gotten him, we might not have gotten Maddux, because after the Bonds deal fell through, we signed Greg Maddux as a free agent. So
that's tough to say. Yeah. Who knows which one of those universes results in more World Series?
Well, I think that wraps up today's show, Adam. Well, folks, hope you're staying safe out there in the quarantine life. We'll see you at some point. I won't say next week because you never know. But until then, rise up, chop on, stay in brotherhood, unite and conquer, remain true to Atlanta. Hospitamina sip.
Hospitamina sip.
Just find someone.